And it's going to be in the main library, the Corrett Auditorium Main Library in San Francisco, 100 Larkin Street. You can probably call them, 415-557-4400, for more information. Again, the BIA Creative Resistance in Myanmar, Sunday, November the 30th, 1 o'clock, and the Court Auditorium Main Library, 100 Larkin Street in the city. Don't miss it. It is an extraordinary film. Jeannie Hallisey, filmmaker for the BIA Creative Resistance in Myanmar. Both of you, thank you so much for joining us today here on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Thank you, Kevin. And that does it for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. Our theme music is written and produced by Charlie Lang. For questions, comments, email Dennis Bernstein at dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The engineering committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You're listening to our KBOO Fights Back campaign. Help KBOO reach our $75,000 goal by December 31st so we can bring you another great year of cutting-edge radio made by you, for you. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 to contribute today.
Here we go again, it's the game we love.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only live board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and getting your friends to lie to each other. I'm one of your hosts, Nate, and with me is not my buddy James. He is a coward who stayed home sick because he cares about his friends. And I can't cotton to that. Instead, we have Althea, the news director, coming back, triumphant return to the show. Welcome.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Great.
Big shoes to fill.
Yeah. As a reminder, you can comment on our show live using the OLARC messaging system. I didn't log into OLARC, so right now you can't do that, but I'll try to get it up and running during
Nate
the show.
Yeah, Nate will do that for you. Just wait.
I'll do it for you. Just wait for me to get through the script. Gosh, you're so impatient out there.
Do you want me to tell them how to find it?
OLARC? Yeah, tell them how to find
it. Yeah, sure. It's on kboo.fm. That's our website. Click on the chat with us button. Nate's pulling it up right now. You can say that you think it's good. You can say that you don't like that game. You can say, you know, thank goodness only Nate showed up to do the show today.
Well, James said he might actually jump in there on the chat.
Oh, so James, we'd love to hear. We'd love to hear.
We have to get James' input in here. I asked if he wanted to call in, but he said between the tummy issues and everything, you know, probably not a great idea. Too much information for you. Sorry, James, I've outed you as being sick. Sorry.
It's tis the season, you know.
Tis. We are currently, speaking of tis the season, okay. We are currently in our KBOO Fights Back campaign, and we're here to remind you of the importance of community media when we need it the most. Help us reach our goal of $75,000 by December 31st, and help fight the MediaZillas. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. All right, so we had big plans for today. We had a guest, we had James, and now we have Althea. But yep. The plans don't change, even though the cast does. So we're going to talk about the game Blood on the Clock Tower. Don't typically talk about one game for an entire episode, but this is like a show favorite. It's mine and James' favorite game ever. Althea, do you have a favorite game, and why is it Blood on the Clock Tower?
I was going to say Blood on the Clock Tower is definitely up there. There is time carved out on my paper calendar every month of when Clock Tower is, and I'm not getting in the way of that schedule if I can help it. It is really fun. It is really fun. It's hard, and it's different every time.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's hard to be good at it.
It is very hard to be good at it. I forget, did we go through any of our background questions? I feel like our listeners don't necessarily need to get to know you because you do have your own show, Genius Box, and have had another show on previously, TBD, mm-hmm. and
The Gap.
Yep. So, like, you're known to KBOO listeners.
So if they've been listening on Friday mornings, then maybe, yeah.
But do you have a gaming history?
Gaming history...
Little ASMR there for people.
Sorry, that was my thinking noise. My gaming history, I think it's probably similar to people more outside of the hobby, which is, you know, your Monopoly, your life. I was really great at the board game Clue, such that my sisters got upset with me and thought I was cheating all the time. Because they're like, well, you put the cards in there. I could just read them, and I knew roughly what was going to happen in any given interaction. Anyway, I'm a fan of the board game Clue.
For James, that's Cluedo.
Oh, true! Which is a pun on Ludo, which I went on a deep dive about Clue last year to produce my own riff on it. I think that's kind of where my board gaming comes from. You know, you do a little bit of Catan? Am I pronouncing it right?
I think
I've gotten yelled at.
Catan, I don't know.
I've gotten yelled at about it before. Played a little bit of that in college, you know.
Yeah, unless you're me and James, where that's not a part of your introduction at all.
Oh, sure. I my family's pretty competitive at board games. I got a couple sore losers that I'm related to. Love them, sore losers though.
Are you a sore loser?
No. And I think also, so Nate has introduced me to a lot of board games through us being friends through the radio station. And it's made me less of a sore loser, I think. And I think you could anecdote a couple times where I did get a little bit sore about doing so badly. But most of the time, if I'm playing games with Nate, it's a new game that I've never heard of. There's no way for me to actually try to like be good at it. So it's just to learn and to, you know, come up with a cool strategy.
There's a theme running through my life right now that actually pleases me quite a bit. Which I've had a number of people, and that number is three or fewer, but it's still a number uh-huh. of people saying like, yeah, I actually have become a better loser by playing games with you.
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm always winning, but I like to think it's because I encourage a laid back atmosphere around the table where it's more about having fun with our friends than it is necessarily about winning. So that's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say I make people better.
And that's why I came here today. Yeah. I actually planted so that your normal co-host and your guest couldn't be here, just so I could tell you how fabulous you are at teaching games and also making people not be jerks about it.
Well, this is the best outcome, really. Now everyone out there knows. So let's go into a little bit about Blood on the Clock Tower. Althea, would you like to describe what Blood on the Clock Tower is? Do you feel up to the task?
It's a tall order. You're usually the person okay. who has to lecture the new people. When I make mention of it to other friends who haven't played before, I say it's kind of like Mafia or Werewolf, but like way more rules, way more complicated stuff happens in it.
Yeah, so in Mafia and Werewolf, there's maybe one or two other characters that have a role that has a special power. In Blood on the Clock Tower, everybody gets a role, And some of those roles are very powerful. Some of them just like change a rule in the game and you don't really have to remember to do much. And that's kind of a relief sometimes. Where you're just like, oh, this can't happen while I'm in the game, but otherwise I don't need to worry about remembering all this information I'm getting. There is a storyteller role outside of the game who is sort of running the game like a DM, and they can manipulate the game. They will give information to players. Most of the time it has to be true, but there are situations where players can be drunk or poisoned where the storyteller has a little bit of discretion on what they tell people. It's split up into two groups. There's evil and good. There's townsfolk who are good, outsiders who are good, but they often complicate things in annoying ways. There's minions for the demon, and there's the demon. And so there's more townsfolk than there are, or there's more good people than there are evil people. And throughout a series of days and nights, you are trying to, the townsfolk try to execute the demon. Sometimes you miss, and the demon will kill someone every night. And there's a voting round where everyone gets to vote on executions. You make your cases, and that's kind of generally the game.
Yeah.
That gets it out there.
Yeah.
So, what do you think really separates it from other games in the, it's called social deduction. That's the genre of games. Mm-hmm. What do you think separates it from other games in that genre?
I guess, I mean, I think I've played the more basic versions of a social deduction game. I think that everybody has a role to play is definitely something that adds a layer of complexity. And that, and this was, you know, difficult for me the first time I played, you don't know anything for sure, you know? And I guess that's kind of true in all ways, but there really is like, it's difficult to get concrete information. And definitely when I first came in to play the game, I was like, well, but what do we know that for sure? And the answer is no, we don't know anything for sure.
Do you remember if you started out on the base Trouble Brewing script, or did we throw you in with like one of the more complicated scripts?
I don't even know if I've ever played Trouble Brewing.
Okay. So there's a whole bunch of, they're called scripts. They have character roles on them. The basic one is called Trouble Brewing, and that's the one they tell everyone to intro on. And I have more on that later. But on that script, there's a character called The Drunk, and you don't know that you are the drunk. You think you're another character, and you have to sort of figure it out by the information the storyteller gives you. So it really makes all the information hard to trust, because you're like, well, that person could be the drunk, or they could be poisoned by the poisoner and be getting false information. Another thing I think that separates it from those other games, one, it is a lot more expensive.
Oh.
It's like over $140 for the game.
Oh my gosh.
Which, you know, I've been playing it once a month at least for 3 years. I've definitely got my money's worth out of it. It's what they would call a lifestyle game. It's the only game that I make sure to play every month. Not even my number two favorite game, Barrage, do I make sure to play every month. I maybe play that 4 or 5 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's also can be very long.
I got a little upset about this when we played in October.
Yeah, the Bad Moon Rising script has a demon called the Zambul who you have to kill twice. And so if you are trying to kill everybody that you've killed twice, it makes for a long game. Bad Moon Rising sort of has the reputation of being like, oh, this could be a 30-minute game, or it could be a 3.5-hour game. We played that one once for 4 hours.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that, thank goodness.
Yeah,
it was not that long even when we played in October, and there was a Zambul and I was getting so frustrated.
But we got him.
We got him.
We got him. But it can be very long. Most other social deduction games last, you know, 30 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
And there's some exceptions to that, but and it's long. There's so much information in it. There's just so much, because every character has powers. So what is it about Blood on the Clock Tower that you like?
It's a good question.
Thank you.
I like that it's confusing. I like that I feel incentivized that when we play with a similar group of people, it's like, oh, I kind of know how this person plays. That makes me think maybe they're telling the truth here. And there's, so there's like a meta level that I think is interesting. There's, and anytime, I think the part that still gets me to this day is, anytime you think you know what's going on, you're like, okay, well, it was this. When the game's over, that's not what happened at all. you might have guessed in the right direction, but however you showed your work to come to the conclusion that somebody was the demon or somebody was a minion or this is why nobody died last night, you're almost always wrong.
Yeah, one of my favorite things. So we were supposed to have a guest. Our friend, Travis, was supposed to be on tonight. This morning. It's morning.
Well, I mean, it's dark in here.
It's dark in here, and it's night somewhere. So, and it might be night when people listen.
Okay.
Anyway, there was one time where there's a character called the Lunatic, and they think they are the demon, and they I might get some details wrong. It was a while ago, but Travis was amongst a group of people who all thought that they were good, but they were all evil. No, I think I have it backwards. They all thought they were evil, and so they were trying to kill someone, and they got the person killed. It happened to be the real demon who they killed, so they won the game for the complete opposite reason that they thought that they had won the game, which was a delight because they were so wrong on what they thought.
Yeah,
but it didn't matter because they killed the demon.
Yeah,
and it was hilarious. I really like about the game that, so you sit in a big circle and everyone has to stay in the same seats because the storytellers
needs
order, people. We need order and structure. And sometimes we can be mean trying to get you back into your seats because, you know, we got to keep things moving. But what I like about it is everybody gets up and goes off and has private conversations. You're not all sitting around a table talking about things, but you're going and you're conspiring and you come up with all these plans and you will not talk to every other character. So everybody comes out of a game of Blood on the Clock Tower with a different story and a different experience where they've just been like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know this stuff was happening over there. And like when you have an execution phase, you can kind of sit around and all share information that you've gotten, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you get all the information that's out there. So then at the end of the game, when it's all revealed, you're just like, whoa, I can't believe that I was so off base, or like, man.
Oh, I was right about that one thing and nobody believed me. You guys are idiots.
Yeah. And it's an amazing thing. It's like you said earlier, it's a different experience every time. There's just dozens and dozens and dozens of characters. I would say hundreds. There's probably maybe 100
by now.
Well,
it's cool because sometimes when we play a fan-created script.
Yeah.
That has different interactions than the base ones.
Yeah. And the other thing that I really enjoy about this that separates it from other games of its ilk is that if you are killed, you're not eliminated from the game. You still participate in all the same ways. You become a ghost, in quotes. And that allows you one more vote in executions. You don't have your power anymore, but if you're killed by the demon, oftentimes people trust you more, so you can kind of get more information out of it. So you're not kind of eliminated from the game when you are killed, which is great, because being eliminated in a two-hour game and then doing nothing, that would stink.
Yeah.
It also has roles called travelers. So if someone shows up late, you can give them a traveler role. Or if they know they're going to leave early, you can give them that role. And it's a role that can come and go, and it doesn't really matter if they're there the whole time or not, which is nice and flexible. Going to reset real quick.
Okay.
You're listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate here with Althea, and this is Winner's Bias, a show about the board gaming hobby. We're talking about the board game Blood on the Clock Tower. And if you've been enjoying the show so far, show your support by helping KBOO out with our KBOO Fights Back campaign, making space and making moves for community voices. Consider becoming a member today at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. All right, so we have mentioned that there's a large cognitive load required for the game. Many people suggest that you should never introduce this game to others with anything but base trouble brewing, because it has the least amount of mechanics in it. There's no madness, which is where you have to think you're another character or else the storyteller could kill you. We don't do that in our group. Do you think we're being too hard on newcomers?
No. Well, I think probably I'm partial to my own experience, which is I did it, so everybody else can totally handle it. I think... Oh, also sometimes people who play for the first time, they're like, oh yeah, I watched a video on it. I didn't do that. I just showed up and was bewildered. But I think it actually goes back to the attitude towards playing a new game, which is if you're not so focused on winning and you're just trying to like learn as much as you possibly can and find where you fit in, find what your options are and find ways to like have fun with it and how to interact with like the material, it becomes a lot easier. And I think that definitely when I first played, I wanted concrete information. I wanted to know that I was doing the right thing. And I think actually the group sometimes is like a little skittish about voting people out because we don't want to do the wrong thing a little too hard. But yeah, I don't
of my existence there.
Yeah, Nate really does not like that. He's like, guys, we have to kill people in order for the game to progress.
There's roles that get information when people are executed.
Yeah. And we're pretty skittish about it, especially in the first round. I don't think you have to teach on the first one, as long as you don't have an expectation that you're going to understand everything that's going on. I think if you were with an entirely new group, you might want to start smaller, but...
Yeah, what I find, and maybe it's just like our group is, I like to think, particularly welcoming and helpful, but because there's a storyteller who's outside of the game, and because... there's just so much going on. It's really easy for new people to ask questions, like clarifying questions about, I don't understand this role. I don't understand this. And so it's like, yes, you're going to be confused. You're going to be confused on the trouble brewing script.
Yeah, it's confusing. It's a confusing game.
We've played it a few times, even with like all experienced people. And it's still just like, oh yeah. Because it turns out they did a lot of work putting it together and it works great. So I think the ability for you just to ask questions throughout the game doesn't leave you in the dark. Plus, you mentioned the meta earlier. New players don't have a meta.
Yeah.
And it actually gives them an advantage because...
Huge advantage, by the way.
They're unreadable. You don't know their habits. And we've had so many times where... in the other Zombul game that went 4 hours, one of the new players was the Zombul.
Yeah.
And they kept voting after they had been executed. And I kept being like, oh, no. You're dead. You can't vote anymore. You're going to use your ghost vote. And they kept doing it and it kept counting. And I'm just sitting there telling them like, oh, no. You can't do it. And they knew exactly what they were doing.
Even in the most recent Zombul game that happened.
Yeah. And... they had played a couple more times, so
that's true,
they weren't
that's true.
Exactly new, but they were relatively new. But yeah, it was crazy. The new people manipulate the people who've been playing for a while.
Totally.
Or at least me. I'm manipulatable, I think.
No, I'm very manipulatable. When my friend Rosemary, shout out Rosemary, started playing, there were a couple different games where she was the demon, or there was some chain of events that had her turn into the demon. And when you're new, a lot of what you say is like, wait, I'm confused. Like, wait, what's going on? Like, is that this person? Like, why do we think this person is this role? Are we sure that we should be killing this person, right? In the execution phase or whatever. And she got away with it for so long. And I remember just when it was revealed at the end, I was like, what? Because I was defending her the whole time. I was like, guys, it's like one of her first times. Like, please give her a little bit of slack. I know that she's seeming kind of suspicious, but I think she's just a little confused.
I
got played by that.
Yeah. I remember when one of our friend Robin's first game, shout out Robin, was playing for the first time. Travis and Robin are partners, and Travis knows Robin very well. And Robin could not lie in front of Travis without Travis picking up. Now, Travis is very shrewd.
I want you to get Travis back on the program because Travis is truly, like, it's hard to be good at Clock Tower. Travis is very good at Clock Tower.
He's very good at Clock Tower. And there was one time I misspoke a role. Two roles started with a V. They were both demons, but I misspoke it. And Travis was like, oh, Nate wouldn't have screwed that up if that was the demon in play. And so I was so mad that he was right, because it's an honest mistake. And he's just always picking up on stuff. One time he saw James draw the tile. At the start of the game, you draw a tile. It tells you what your role is. And James went down to the character sheet and looked at the bottom of it where all the demons are to see what it did. And Travis caught that. And he's like, James is the demon. I saw him look at the bottom right when he drew the thing. And it's just like, he's always noticing things. And Robin could not lie to Travis in the first couple games. He caught them all the time. And now Robin can lie.
Yeah. They've gotten a lot better.
Which is pretty fun. It's pretty fun that we've taught Robin how to lie to Travis. I think that's cool. So have you ever wanted to try storytelling?
I'm kind of interested in it. It seems like a big lift. And I'm interested in what you said earlier, where there are, like, you know, executive choices that you get to make as the storyteller. Like, how much leeway do you have?
You have within, like, bounds. So if someone's poisoned, you have to give them bad information. But if they're drunk, you can give them good information. And so one of the questions I have here was, like, does the storyteller have too much agency in the game? Because that's one of the complaints, where it's like the storyteller is just dictating what's happening in the game and the players are at the whim of them.
They're just pawns.
But a good storyteller is just trying to create balance in the game. So if they see good is running away with it, they might try to push it back towards evil, because they just want the game to get to, like, the last night where, you know, good has to kill the demon, and if they don't kill the demon will kill good and get the win.
That's your goal when you're
that's the goal as a storyteller. So I'm not trying to manipulate things because I want someone to win. Although sometimes, like, good or evil plays a particularly good game and you're like, I could try to rebalance this, but they're just crushing right now, and I don't want to ruin that for anyone. But yeah, in terms of, like, what you can and can't do, it's mostly things, roles where you can kill someone at any time. Like, I think it's the Tinker that could just die at any time. And it's that sort, those sorts of decisions that can feel particularly fraught for players.
Have you gotten complaints in how you've run the games, or no?
No, actually. Even when I mess up, everyone's very kind. We have a very kind group of people. Okay. Very understanding.
That's making me worry about what a meaner group of people would be like.
I've heard things, or okay. I've read things, actually. I've read things, but yeah, it's... the storyteller is going to screw up, especially newer storytellers, and you have to be okay with that. We've had several games where myself or Travis, who are the primary storytellers, though others have tried, James has tried, our friend Vinny, shout out Vinny, has tried, and everyone's done great. But there's so many interactions between characters that you're going to miss something, and it's okay. Be generous with yourself. Sometimes you can make up for it. Sometimes you just say, hey, I made a mistake, we're gonna play on. Or if it's early enough, you just re-rack and you say, all right, you know what, that didn't go the way I wanted it to. We re-rack. We had a game happen recently where Travis executed someone, shouldn't have done it. We started over. That was the game where I was given a minion token and I was confusing it with an outsider token.
Oh yeah.
And I
that
immediately
was a bad game for you.
Oh, so bad. I immediately told Althea I was this character, and Althea was like, that's a minion. I was like, oops.
We were standing out on the porch and I'm like, okay, interesting. I immediately run and I go, Brian, I have to tell you something.
Shut up, Brian.
Immediately ran away with information.
Yeah, and it basically meant that for the next hour to an hour and a half, I really didn't have anything to do because no one trusted me, and I couldn't talk to the evil team because they would be like, why is Nate talking to them?
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh god, that was not my shining moment.
That's all right. Sometimes you have to go low so that next time you can go high.
That's right. And you know, you have good games and you have bad games.
That's true.
And you know, I think I've only ever had a self-imposed bad game. Like that one, I just screwed up. But all the other ones have been terrific.
Yeah.
It's great. There are places around town that run Clock Tower. If you don't want to spend $140, you can just type in Blood on the Clock Tower Portland and find like groups that will meet up if anyone's interested in it. But yeah, it's just a delight, and it's pretty heavy. And I guess we got to read this outro script because we're running out of time. Thank you, Althea, so much for filling in for James and Travis.
Happy to do it.
Doing the work of two people over there. And thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kbu.org, and you can find us on Instagram at winnersbias. Remember to help KBU reach our $75,000 KBU Fights Back campaign goal by showing your support today at kbu.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Every donation is appreciated. I'm Nate.
I'm Althea. Tell a great story and don't worry about winning, guys. Till next time. The game we love. Play game.
Keep our minds on the game.
All the game.
KBOO 90.7 FM.
This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.